Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, November 16th, 2021. Howdy, Dave.
Howdy, Melody, and happy Fast Food Day.
Are you still on this kick?
Well, that's winding down, if it's any consolation. It's also National Button Day, so all you button collectors out there like me, show off your goods today.
How many of those buttons? What type of buttons? You mean buttons that you sew on your shirt, or?
Oh, for collector buttons, like political. I have mostly political buttons. I have over 1,000 of them sitting around my study in boxes and display cases and what have you. My favorite are my original presidential buttons. Still trying to find good old George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. They're out there, but boy, they're expensive.
How far does yours go back?
I have one of, I confess it's a replica of John Quincy Adams. Thomas Jefferson.
Cool.
Yeah, those are the oldest. But again, both of them are replicas. The originals are just, shall we say, eaten up by inflation.
Yeah, and then some. So I suppose we'll talk about a little bit of inflation here briefly. But first, let's go ahead and get a peek at what some... the markets did today. Just a few of the top ones. We have gold, of course, a little pressure, 1190 to the downside at 1851. Silver was down 24 cents, $24.90. Platinum was down $29 at 1068. Palladium was up 7 at 2249. The USDX today was up 0.39 at 95.92. Crude oil was down 11 cents at 80.77. Paper markets today, you have the Dow up 54 points, 36,142. S&P was up 18 at 4,700. NASDAQ was up 120, 15,973. Asian markets, Shanghai was down once again. European markets, FTSE was down. The rest were up. Bond, 1.639. Not a lot of change there. Excuse me, from yesterday, 1.639% for the U.S. 10-year yield. And, you know, that's pretty much all that is, you know, I don't know, Dave, if things are kind of winding down for the holidays, or is there's just so much out there that we're just becoming numb to it. Headlines don't shock me anymore. And you have retail sales that rose in October for a third straight month, looking like households continue to spend even with the fastest inflation in decades. Well, does the retail sales rise? Is that affected by the rate of inflation?
Yeah.
If things are going higher, people aren't buying this. People are buying the same thing. They're not spending more on additional items. They're just spending more on the same things that they bought. So that would show retail sales rose, or is that on a individual type basis?
That's overall. I think all kinds of retail purchases. Not sure I'm understanding your question, but...
Well, if the overall retail purchases increased 1.7% last month, does that involve the additional amount that people are paying?
Does it go by dollar amount? Yes, that's the dollar amount of... that's a dollar-weighted figure, so
right.
That would presumably include these increased prices that we've seen.
So then we really don't know if there really was an increase in retail purchases, if it was affected by the dollar amount. Anyway,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. So prices are rising at the fastest pace in 30 years in conjunction with inflation. We've had reports that inflation is at its highest number in 30 years. Businesses continue to pass on the growing labor and input costs to customers. It's hard to tell just how much that's impacting demand since the figures, I guess they aren't adjusted for inflation, but they should.
Oh, well, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, but that's what they tell us, though, Dave. Come on. Come on.
Well, we'll see a new number next week, then, that will include that inflation adjustment.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting. I'm not quite sure. I guess that's got to be current prices, so it must mean we'll see a lower figure next week when price increases are presumably, I guess that they're removed from these figures. So I don't know what that'll take it down to, we will see.
Okay, let's see. What did the Commerce Report say?
Well, 11 of the 13 categories registered sale increases. Electronics and appliance stores saw a big surge in sales, as did building materials. Non-store retailers, which of course include e-commerce. Now, they're saying the larger than forecast gain may also reflect earlier than usual shopping as gift buyers race to beat the shipping delays from the supply chain disruptions. We also know that motor vehicle and parts dealer sales rose by almost 2%. Receipts at gasoline stations jumped just about 4%. That's the most since March. That's certainly reflecting how Americans are paying the highest prices at the pump, and in some cases in close to 10 years. Now, restaurant and bar receipts, that's the only services category in the retail report, were little changed from the prior month. And that was following a very modest gain in September. The report suggests fourth quarter consumer spending growth is off to a good start. Nevertheless, we know from last week that personal consumption slowed sharply in the third quarter as shortages and these transportation bottlenecks starting at, you know, the shipping ports, along with the rising prices. And yes, the Delta variant, I'm afraid, weighed on the spending. Now, economists do expect consumption to pick up in the last quarter of the year amid an improving labor market and health situation. So-called control group sales, which are used to calculate GDP, but exclude auto, food services and auto dealers, building material stores and gas stations, advanced 1.6%. Percent. Again, I don't know if that's inflation adjusted or not, Melody.
Well, you know, this one is going to get me going a little bit, and I think that's why, you know.
It's in there.
You know, inflation is not going to moderate when the pandemic does. And this is what the administration is saying and thinking. That is just going to go away. And, you know, and I mentioned it a couple of times, when you see some of these questions that are asked about inflation, about the supply chain, they just laugh. They chuckle and smile and laugh and think it's funny that people are paying more prices. For what? For their bad decisions. And for their lack of addressing the problems. They laugh.
People've got to get on the same page here. This is just getting way out of hand.
It is. And here, the, and of course, you've got the Deputy Treasury Secretary, Wally Adeyemo. Of course, he's going to say, well, we're doing the best we can in these most difficult situations. No, you're not. No, you're not. Why?
Well, let me put it to you this way, though. It occurred to me. If they are doing the best they can, then we're maybe in a little to a lot more trouble than we thought.
Yeah, you're right. Good point there, David. Surprises me. But you're right. But you're right. If this is the best that they're doing, what are we got to face? Now, that's pretty scary. I'm even surprised that his approval rating is 41%. Last week I saw it was 38% on something. I'm not quite sure what it was because I really don't follow these polls because, you know, they change as, you know, the weather does. Until we fully address the pandemic, we're going to face what else do you have to do to address the pandemic? You already have. How about addressing the hundreds of thousands of people going across the border? Today was the first, I had to laugh. They were showing pictures of the illegal aliens with masks on. That's the first time in what, a year? It kind of cracked me up. So they're trying to improve the image. And if you look at the states where the cases of COVID are increasing, not all of them, but a lot of them, that's where a lot of these illegal aliens are being bused to. They're not tested. We have to get mandates. Do they? I don't think so. So, yeah, they're doing the best they can. Please. You know, these people, Dave, you know, it really is sad, and you're absolutely correct. This is the best that they're doing. Heaven help us.
Well, I mean, we're not going to talk about it. We're not scheduled to talk about this today, but you got Lyle Brainard, who's one of the top candidates to become the next Fed chair. And she, in a speech, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, was talking all about, I mean, climate change. I mean, it's not that that's not necessarily an important issue, although I know it's, you know, in the minds of a lot of our listeners, it's a very controversial subject. But nevertheless, the Fed has two mandates, controlling inflation and maximizing employment. Now, you know, if this Congress or a future Congress wants to tinker with that, and we've seen how well they've done over time with just those two mandates, if all of a sudden they're adding this third one, I'm just not sure that, I mean, there are plenty of other groups and agencies out there working on this topic. It seems to me the Fed has plenty to worry about without becoming part of the environmental cadre in our country, Melody.
Yeah, I saw that about him, about where his interest is with the climate. So what's that got to do with the Fed? I mean, come on.
Well, I guess we'll find out if Lyle's nominated by Biden. We're hearing reports today coming out of the White House that an announcement in that regard is imminent. I'm not sure what that means, if that means, you know, today, tomorrow, next week. But insofar as the term is up, early February, and they've got to get through a Congress with a lot of contention. You know, I say the sooner the better. whomever it's going to be.
Yeah, it's not going to make any difference. They all say the same thing. It's all Fed speak. They ought to eliminate the Fed. But anyway, that's just my view. But home builder confidence is the highest level since May of 2020. Higher prices, long wait times don't appear to be turning buyers away from the nation's home builders. With demand still surging, home builder confidence in the market for single family homes rose more than expected. Now, this is the highest level since last May. And confidence rose 3 points to 83 on the National Association of Home Builders Housing Market Index. Anything above 50 is considered positive. And so it really did move quite a bit because there were the expectations had only been they didn't expect it to change. They expected it to remain at 80. And but of course, in November of 2020, of course, that was before. That was just a year ago. It was at 90, so it has to come down quite a bit. Lack of resale inventory combined with strong consumer demand. I can't believe how they're selling houses anymore. I know someone that's selling their house, Dave. Do you know how they're doing it?
I don't know.
They put it on the market for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they show the heck out of it. And at the end of those 2 weeks, you know, people will place their bids. And then there's a meeting with the real estate agent, with the buyer, to see if they're willing to accept those offers. And I says, well, you have to accept those offers because there was one that was just a little bit more than what they were selling for. No, I don't have to accept it. That's what I mean. You have it advertised for this amount, and it's not being, and somebody wants to buy it at the amount. And you can still reject it?
No, I didn't think that was. I mean, unless they've got something in their sale agreement, I thought if you bring an offer in that's equal to or greater than the listing price,
you have to sell it.
You're legally obliged to honor that, or else, you know, there's a potential tort. You know, that there's some money that can go to that prospective buyer. That's interesting. I mean, it's just bad faith bargaining, isn't it? You know,
I don't know what it is, but I just found it odd that if someone made an offer, it's not given to the buyer at that point in time and letting them accept it or reject it. They gather everybody up and then these are all your offers that you had.
You want to play games like that. Don't listen.
I know. Hey, I hear we're not playing games. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Please make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And, you know, we were talking about home building. We talk about inflation. Well, what about rent? I get this. This is a new report from CoreLogic. And rents for single-family homes have increased 10.2% nationally in September year over year, up from a 2.6% rise in September of last year. So they talk about the improved job growth. Really? Improved job growth? And sky-high prices? In the for-sale housing market added to already strong demand for the single-family rentals. Improved job growth. Okay. Have you seen any improved job growth? We've seen jobs, people get some of their old jobs back that were, but I wouldn't call it improved. While 93% of consumers said they believe owning a home is a good investment, fierce competition in the buying market is forcing more potential buyers to remain renters. The single family market, we know how hot it is right now. People want more space, multitude of reasons, Dave. So, single family rental vacancy rates remain near 25-year lows in the third quarter of 2021. And they're looking for rent growth should continue to be robust. You know, the problem with this country, we don't have affordable housing. That's the problem. It's a big problem.
Yeah, and this growth in rent prices is strong in every price tier right now, but it's the strongest at the very top. The lower priced homes, defined as rent being 75% or less than the regional median, it's 8.3%, up from 2.4 a year ago. Lower to middle priced, that's 75 to 100% of the regional median, that's up 9.3%. Middle, higher to middle priced, or middle to higher priced, I should say, which is 100 to 125% of the regional median, that's up 10.5%. And the highest priced, 125% or more, the regional median, that's up 11%. Compared to just under 3% a year ago. Now, again, not surprisingly, some markets are hotter or colder than others. Rent growth strongest in Miami, 26% year over year, followed by Phoenix at 19.8% and Las Vegas at 16%, call it. Austin, Texas, San Diego rounded out the top five. Now on the bottom, you got Chicago, Boston, Philly, Washington, D.C., surprisingly, and the New York City metropolitan area, which is still reeling from the great exodus last year. They're seeing the lowest rent growth of under 5% from a year ago.
And then we wonder why we see the housing, the homeless numbers increasing. They can't afford anything.
No, it's
you know, so then we wonder why we've seen such, you know, areas of these cities just go to trash.
Yeah, a lot of these cities which had promised after the Great Recession that you know, how committed they were to affordable housing set asides in new developments, just have sold out lower income people.
Campaign promises.
Yeah. Oh, well, we didn't know that things like the pandemic were going to provide such a hit to our budgets. Lower rental, lower sales prices and rental prices mean lower income subject to our local taxes, blah, 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 blah. Yeah,
sounds like a lot of excuses to me. One thing they're good for is excuses. This is kind of a sad story, and it's the world that we live in today. It's not sad, but it's the world that we live in today. And we talk a lot about debt on this program, and we need to get out of debt. You shouldn't be in debt. Try to get out, pay off your bills. But yet, 46% of all Americans expect to carry debt into retirement. Almost half of Americans will carry debt. Debt can derail a lot of folks' retirement plans. This report was out, a survey by a personal finance site, Magnify Money. Older Americans owe more than ever before. The total debt burden for Americans over age 70 increased 614% through 2021 from 1999, so in 21 years. To $1.27 trillion. Now, this is just according to the New York Fed. Most Americans recognize that it's increasingly their responsibility to fund retirement rather than relying solely on a pension or Social Security. Yet 43% fear their retirement dreams could be disrupted if Social Security runs dry. Excuse me. The Department of the Treasury has said the Social Security Trust Fund will run out of money to pay all current benefits a year sooner than expected. And, of course, they all blame the pandemic. But let's just call it bad management on government. That's the real problem. The IOUs that were always placed in the Social Security Trust Fund. But, Dave, and this is all based on a strong stock market. What's going to happen when their current investments get hit? What happens to that debt? What happens to their standard of living?
Well, I mean, you're pointing to something that could be scary and points out why it's so important to have your portfolios diversified with plenty of gold and silver for that reason alone. When there's another correction, and it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when, and a lot of people, and these are people who aren't into scare tactics, they're just being cautious. And some of these are hedge fund guys who are among the riskiest of investors out there. If that happens, I mean, particularly these 43% of folks who are concerned about having their retirement disrupted. That could put your level of worry on a whole nother level if we have another major correction of 20% or more, particularly with all the asset growth of the last 10 to 15 years since the Great Recession. And that would certainly reduce retirement payments from 401ks and IRAs, as well as medical benefits for older Americans. Now, some say that, and these are financial planners, that carrying some debt in retirement isn't necessarily bad if those debt payment plans don't put a huge financial strain on your retirement income. But like Shelley Anawika at TIAA, initially a big manager of teacher and professor retirement monies, they've since opened up, It says that it's likely retirees will have to factor in some amount of debt repayment, such as a mortgage or auto loan. But because she says they typically come with low or lower interest rates, she calls that, quote, manageable debt. Well, perhaps compared to certainly to credit card interest rates, but let's not forget, too, that the largest loans in the average American's household are, one, mortgage by far, but secondly, vehicle loans, and they're typically more than one. And so while you may be paying, you know, 3.25%, 3.5%, maybe even 4% on those compared to, you know, 6 or 7% for more, or in the case of credit cards, an average of 16%. You know, let's just say because of the principal on the lower interest loans, you're still paying a whole lot of money over a 15 or 30 year period in the case of mortgages. So, you know, to call it manageable, I guess it's manageable to the extent you know what your principal payments are outstanding. But unfortunately, it's just far too many people who whose credit card debt with these higher rates are overtaking their greener pasture plans the closer they get to retirement. And, you know, that's just a prescription for disaster, Melody.
Yes. It does seem that way. So, again, folks, get out of debt, pay cash, try to stay away from those credit cards. They just eat you up alive. And I think there's a new, you know, with the seniors now, I mean, well, I want to talk about this. I you brought this. This was going to be your levity is golden.
Yeah.
And, you know, Butch and I, you know, he's been trying to bring some happy moments throughout the program and so forth. And this really is a cool story. It's about an 83-year-old from Alabama, Dave. So tell us about him.
Yeah, modern-day Forrest Gump of sorts, Melody. I mean, he started working when he retired over 25 years ago and apparently hasn't stopped since.
Can you imagine walking for 25 years?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I guess I can let my imagination run wild and see myself 30 pounds lighter and in much better shape. But Sonny Eberhardt strode into the record books a little over a week ago Sunday as the oldest hiker to complete the Appalachian Trail, roughly 2,200 miles, I believe. Eberhardt, who's known by the trail name Nimble Will Nomad, acknowledged that he must have been drinking some moonshine that night when he came up with that name. They acknowledged that the trail was tough going at his age, leading to quite a few spills on slippery rocks. He hiked the trail out of order in sections to take advantage of good weather. Had already completed the northern sections, including Maine's Mount Katahdin, the northernmost part of the trail. He completed his final section in western Massachusetts in the same year that a five-year-old became the youngest to complete the feat. Joining Eberhardt for the finish was the former record holder, Dale, nicknamed Graybeard Sanders, who lives outside Memphis, Tennessee, who completed his hike at the age of 82 4 years ago. Eberhardt began his wanderlust, or should I... What do we want to call him, Melody? Why don't we call him Nimble Will? Nimble Will started after retiring as an optometrist in Florida in 1993. This man with flowing white hair and an impressive mountain man-esque beard actually hike farther than most who traverse the 2,193-mile trail. He started his hike in February at his home in Flag Mountain, Alabama, adding hundreds of extra miles to the route. He said he was feeling his age on this hike, however. His reflexes aren't what they once were, and he tried to limit himself to 8 hours of hiking a day. 8 hours a day,
Melody. 8 hours a day, I know.
But he still got banged up. Now, with the hike over, Eberhardt says he'll return to his home at Flag Mountain, the southernmost mountain topping 1,000 feet in the Appalachians, where he serves as caretaker of a fire tower and cabins that were built decades ago by the Civilian Conservation Corps. Now, Charles Norman, who publishes the hiker yearbook, said Eberhardt probably won't hang up his boots, however, anytime soon. Eberhardt reportedly told Norman, you know, they're calling this my final hike. And then he laughed, saying, I don't think, and this is now Norman saying, he says he doesn't think this will be his last hike. He said, I just don't think he, Eberhardt Nimberwill, knows what he's going to do next. As for me, Melody, I'm not sure I'll ever get that particular hike off my bucket list. 2,200 miles of slots of slippery rocks and lions and tigers and bears. Perhaps my grandsons will show us the way. And that is this week's Levity is Golden.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, you know. 8 hours a day. So, you know, when I get up to, well, I work more than 8 hours a day, but just think of hiking that whole time.
Well, that's
pretty impressive for an 83-year-old.
Yeah. Figure 20-minute miles. That's what, 3 an hour, 8:25. That's almost a marathon every day. I'll say, if a poor guy has those shin splints. Wonder how many. I did not see how many pairs of hiking boots he went through on that trek. I got to think that was more than one.
Well, great job on that one. Well, you know, we're going to be heading into a break here in just a few minutes. And, you know, remember that old pandemic relief? We used to talk about how states and politicians and business people were using it for their own slush fund. And now here you have an Iowa governor accused, and just accused, it doesn't mean that he did it or not, but accused of misusing pandemic relief aid. And Governor Kim Reynolds of using nearly $500,000 in federal pandemic relief funds. And and that takes us right into the break. So it's you never know who will misuse federal funds on the backs of the taxpayers. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other client business. This final segment, call her at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. You know, Will Rogers, the famed humorist, once quipped, you can be on the right track, but still get run over if you're standing still. Well, in that vein, it's been said that the WTO, the World Trade Organization, is like a bicycle. It needs forward movement or it will simply fall. But it seems there's one problem, getting 164 governments to pedal toward the same destination. Over its 26-year history, the WTO has a spotty record for notching wins. What's more, its members haven't collectively moved forward on any issues for the better part of the last decade. WTO Director Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala has urged nations to try to target two or three outcomes in these areas. An agreement to curb harmful fishing subsidies, a framework to expand global trade in vaccines, and a pledge to reduce trade distorting agricultural policies. These are all broad multilateral issues on which WTO members have said they want to achieve progress, even if they disagree on the desired outcomes. Then there's a separate track of what's called plural lateral trade deals being negotiated among like-minded members that generally move faster than multilateral agreements because, well, they get around the WTO's consensus requirement, which essentially means almost, you know, essentially unanimous decisions. Well, the current raft of plural lateral discussions include domestic regulations and services, investment facilitation, e-commerce, women's empowerment, and yes, the environment. International businesses are focused on these items, particularly e-commerce, investment facilitation, and services regulation. Why? Well, because they say they could quickly help ease the burden of cross-border commerce for some of the world's most dynamic industries, particularly in some of the lesser developed countries in Africa and Asia. Now, of all these potential outcomes, there are only two things under consideration that really matter to people in the global trading system, and one of them hasn't even been mentioned yet. The first is trade and health. Almost 2 years into the global pandemic, by the way, the virus is still killing thousands of people each day, and most people living in the developing world haven't even been offered one dose of a vaccine. Not that they take it, but they haven't been available to be offered. Now, Okonjo-Iweala has called the inequality of vaccination distribution a moral outrage and has urged WTO members to use trade to help expand global access to not just vaccines, but all life-saving drugs. Now, if WTO members can't come to an agreement related to vaccines, which would mark a clear negotiating failure, well, that would certainly cement the WTO's irrelevance in the minds of many. Next, the WTO itself needs to be reformed. Its dispute settlement system is paralyzed, its negotiating function severely compromised, and its monitoring function at best underperforming. Though all WTO members agree that something needs to be done in these areas, They failed to agree to do anything about it so far. Time will tell, ladies and gentlemen, if the WTO can do better. In fact, if it can do anything. Now, our latest American Survival newsletter has once again hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Here's an excerpt of my article. One thing that's clear is that elevated inflation is producing a backlash across the general public, economists, opinion makers, and policymakers themselves. Now, this has been building for quite some time, but last week's CPI report has further opened the floodgates. But first, I mean, a survey of over 2,000 American adults conducted recently by the Harris Poll demonstrates the public challenge of implementing a pro-growth agenda in the U.S. Public's overwhelmingly noticing inflation, and there's pushback against the notion that it's worth the price of rapid growth. Some of these numbers almost certainly go a long way towards explaining falling consumer confidence that we're seeing in other surveys, like University of Michigan. Here are a few other of the questions that consumers are being asked. How concerned are you about the economic inflation, meaning the rising prices on goods, products, and services? Answer, 55% say they're very concerned, 35% somewhat concerned, 7% not too concerned, and 3% not concerned at all. Then there's this one. Which of the following would you prefer? An economy with slow job growth but low inflation? Do you believe 68% feel that way? Or an economy with high inflation but rapid job growth? Just 32% prefer that. However you look at it, the tightening labor market seems to be getting tighter. Measures the latest JOLTS ratio, showing that for every job opening in September, there was significantly less than one person actually seeking a job. 0.7 job seekers available per job is at an all-time low, with the exception of 1 month, April 2019, when that stat hit 0.69. Well, that's according to the latest government's job opening and labor turnover report, J-O-L-T-S, JOLTS. Now, mixing that lopsided ratio with a scenario where job seeker skills and geographic locations may be at a mismatch with employer needs at the moment, well, it's a recipe for hiring challenges, if not a disaster. Job quits, that's how many workers voluntarily leave their jobs, also hit a new monthly record in September at 3% of the total workforce. And that bests several monthly records set earlier this year. So with workers in high demand in any number of industries, they've been able to more easily jump to new jobs with higher pay and better benefits and more desirable working conditions. In other words, teach your children well, huh? Well, nearly every sector has been dealing with labor shortage since the country shut down last March, but the problem's been especially severe in public education. And the problem predates the pandemic, stemming mostly from stagnant wages, and has consequences we're yet to understand fully about the education and well-being of the next generation. Now, we know the pandemic triggered a teacher exodus, but observers, experts, are warning that the shortage of instructors is still squeezing America's schools, especially as they reopened earlier this fall. Demand for teachers is drastically outpacing supply. Many teachers are simply retiring or quitting the profession altogether because of stress. And colleges and universities aren't turning out new teachers fast enough to replace the ones retiring or quitting. Schools are rapidly trying to navigate this shortage, but, you know, they're switching to virtual learning or closing down on certain days entirely. But that's been a drain on parents looking to re-enter the workforce themselves. Nationally, there were 575,000 fewer local and state education employees in October 21 than in February 20. That's according to the latest government jobs report. And while health concerns and the stress of darting between virtual and in-person education drove teachers and school support staff and administrators out in 2020, doesn't look like they're coming back to school even as the pandemic subsides. A net of 65,000 public education employees left the industry between September and October 2021 alone, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics anyway. Economist Susanna Loeb and director of Brown University's Annenberg Institute notes that teacher salaries had fallen in the few years leading up to the pandemic, reducing the supply of teachers. So the shortage of teachers may actually be greater than the shortage in other areas, which are more pandemic related. The disparity in wages between teachers and the rest of the comparably educated workforce was about 21% as recently as 2018. That gap at 6% was a lot smaller back in 1996. And while teacher pay has gone up this year, that group's wage gains of 0.7% in the third quarter of 2021 were just half the 1.5% average for all civilian workers during that time period. All of that is pushing existing teachers, well, to pivot to new careers, and it's discouraging new college graduates from even becoming teachers, despite their having studied it for 3 or 4 years. Superintendent of Lisbon Public Schools in North Dakota, Justin Fryer, laments, our state universities just aren't producing enough teachers for our state. So, what's the impact of this? Well, when teachers take days off or have to be quarantined after getting infected, school districts can't replace many of them. In fact, Fryer says, finding substitutes has become a tremendous problem. I mean, after all, in many cases, it pays more to work as a drive-through cashier at McDonald's than to be a substitute teacher. Experts like Michigan State Superintendent of Public School Instruction Michael Rice say that fixing that problem, the broken labor market, for teachers anyway, is actually quite simple. More funding. If only it were that easy, Superintendent Rice. I mean, they do say larger pay increases will help recruit a new generation of teachers and retain veteran teachers to boot, and funding for training programs can help school support staff become instructors. Rice points to these examples of crossover success stories. A bus driver, for example, became a teacher in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and a second shift custodian became a teacher in Clifton, New Jersey. Plus, teacher aides and other support staff with a passion for and experience in, you know, working with kids can make excellent teachers if districts only had the funds to send them back to school. Now, that's Rice. But with teachers, you know, across the country complaining of extreme burnout, school districts are trying out big changes, including longer holiday breaks and shorter days. Many educators were happy to get back into the classroom this year after a year-long challenge of remote learning, but shortages have forced teachers to take on extra roles and give up their planning periods to fill in where needed. Even back in the classrooms, teachers in many districts are also tasked with navigating the pandemic protocols, you know, ensuring that students social distance and keep their masks on where required. Nearly 1 in 4 teachers said they were likely to leave their jobs at the end of last school year, compared with 1 in 6 who said the same before the pandemic. I mean, data from this school year aren't yet available. 1 in 6 versus 1 in 4, 50% increase. high levels of teacher turnover and stress can have a negative impact not only on educators, but students as well. Elizabeth Steiner of RAND points to emerging research that shows teachers' mental health is correlated with the quality of a learning environment. She says, we know that students are really struggling, and if they're looking to their teachers for support and their teachers are struggling and unable to provide that, well, that's problematic. The known effects of teacher burnout has some districts looking for strategies to better support their teachers. And you got school districts in Virginia implementing early departures for students on select Wednesdays. Well, experts say it's a good start, but others, like Randy Weingarten, who's president of the American Federation of Teachers, also says they need to address long-standing issues like teacher pay. In short, Dr. Rice believes we have to rebuild a profession that's been chipped away at. Well, in that vein, be well advised to remember the old adage of my former intern advisor, Bill Kologi: if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Well, look, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to our loyal listeners for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please have a great evening, and be safe out there. Bye-bye.
To be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.